Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, joined by our NBA insider, Tim McMahon, WNBA, NBA analyst, and of course, got to mention it every time, Georgetown Hoops alum, Monica McNutt. Welcome, friends.
Thanks, Rachel.
All right, guys, let's get started with the Bucks and Nets, who played a game reminiscent of 90s basketball last night after getting out to a huge early lead. Milwaukee squandered it, but eventually recovered to win by 3 points. So let's just get right in there, Tim. What worked for the Bucks in game three?
Well, not a whole lot offensively after the first quarter, but I think if you're encouraged in Milwaukee, it's because of the job that PJ Tucker and Drew Holiday did defensively against those star matchups. You feel like with those two guys, you at least have a chance to compete against Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. You're not going to shut them down, but you can make life difficult. You can get to the breath mint type of situations in PJ's case. And they have to have those kind of defensive efforts because you're dealing with two of the best offensive players of this generation.
You're absolutely right, Tim, and I had our team check. Kyrie, defended by Drew Holiday, who technically was his primary defender last night, was 2 for 10. But as important as the defense was, we would be remiss if we didn't acknowledge Chris Middleton and Giannis Antetokounmpo getting on track in terms of their offensive production, making up for 76% of the offensive production of the Bucks last night. Now, is it sustainable? That's a whole nother issue, but it certainly was good to see Chris Middleton starting getting some buckets.
I love that you mentioned the defense on Kyrie. I will tell you that I was at a regular season game between these two teams, and watching Drew Holiday defend Kyrie in that game was enough that when I was debating over my all defense teams and the different levels of different teams, I was like, all right, I'm giving this spot to Drew Holiday because of what he could do and just how much respect I have for Kyrie and how hard it is to defend him. So I was excited to see that happen. More offense, though, is required for this team because Chris Middleton and Giannis scoring all your points, not going to work. Those two guys scored a higher percentage of their team's points than has ever been scored by a tandem on any team in the history of the NBA playoffs. That, friends, is what we call an outlier. You cannot depend on that to win more games. And we have to remember this, they went down 0-2, but you've got to also, when someone wins a game on the other team's floor and all of those types of things, that's all nice talk. But for the Bucks to win this series after going down 0-2, they will have to win 4 out of 5 games. So they won one of those last night. But after that, Monica, how encouraged should Bucks fans feel given what would have to be ahead?
Rachel, I love that breakdown. And if I were to answer that question on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm at a 5. The first two games in this series really, really were disappointing to me. But I also think it showed just how difficult it is to make this Brooklyn Nets squad uncomfortable. I mean, yesterday, they were. Kyrie and KD in particular still got 30 points. And we were still one shot away from this being a ball game that ended in a victory for the Nets. So, I'm very concerned about both the sustainability of the defensive intensity and the offensive efficiency moving forward. For this Bucks squad. I'm not feeling very good if you're a Milwaukee Bucks fan, honestly.
I completely agree. And here's the thing. With Brooklyn, you can compete defensively. You're not going to hold the Nets in the 80s probably ever again. And so you are going to have some offensive explosiveness. They are going to have to be able to get Drew Holiday going. Giannis can't be taking 8 3-pointers in another game in this series if they're trying to win. And look, let's be honest, Joe Harris probably is not going to go 1 of 11 again on good looks.
Yeah, and look, and the Bucks have been on the other end of this, right? They know that a team that goes down 0-2 can come back and win because it happened to them with Toronto. We, of course, just saw it with the Clippers in the Dallas series. So it's possible, but it's really, really hard. Again, once you're down 0-2, you have to win 4 of the last 5. That is a very high standard. And you guys talked about it. It was a season-low 83 points for the Nets yesterday. You could see the impact of missing James Harden, who continues to deal with hamstring tightness. I don't expect to see him for the rest of this series, and that is not based on inside knowledge of the Nets, based on inside knowledge of how hamstrings work. Tim, do you think that that's an affordable thing for the Nets, that if they can't have James back for the rest of this series, they will still be okay?
Well, the fact that they won those two games in Brooklyn obviously put themselves in position to be able to probably get through this series without him. I do think it'd be problematic if they see Philly the next round or, you know, whoever comes out of the Western Conference. Obviously, they felt like they needed James Harden to get them over the hump in terms of being a championship team based on what they gave up to get him. I do think they can manage this series, though, without him.
I agree with Tim. I think this series is okay. And honestly, Rachel and Tim, I'm kind of wondering if a return of Jeff Green could make a difference in this particular series. He's someone that remains most versatile defensively and offensively in terms of what he can do for this Nets squad, not to mention his leadership and some of the intangible things that are vital to this team's success.
That sounds like exactly what I would expect a Georgetown Hoops person to say, Monica. I'm just going to say it. Possibly both. There can things where you could be both biased and correct. And I think that you are both of those things in this case. I do want to ask from your personal experience, though. We see Giannis at the free throw line. We've seen the violations past the 10 seconds, of course. And this goes back, you know, you talk to Shaq, you talk to any of the guys who have historically struggled with free throws. They work on it in practice all the time. It's not like they're not putting the work in. Mm-hmm. What do you think, as someone who has stood at that free throw line under pressure, what do you think is happening here?
Well, we're not going to see any changes in his routine at this point. Any free throw or shooting coach will tell you, stick to the routine, and the changes come in the offseason. So besides being a little bit mindful of that internal clock, he's just going to have to continue to shoot the basketball with confidence and just trust in his routine. I mean, I don't know that it's a case of the yips as much as it is he's just not a good free throw shooter. I mean, that doesn't change overnight, but he has to continue to go to the line and shoot the ball with confidence. It can't be a self-fulfilling prophecy on the negative side. He's got to continue to believe in himself and trust his reps. I would personally like to see him just give me a little bit more knee bend and fluidity, but again, I know those changes don't come during season.
And the worst thing that can happen for Giannis is it gets in his head before he even gets to the mm-hmm. free throw line. And what I mean by that is if he starts being hesitant attacking because he doesn't necessarily want to go to the line, which I think we've seen with guys who have struggled at the free throw line before, he has to be in attack mode. You know, if he shoots 50% from the free throw line, he shoots 50% from the line. Clearly, it's something that he's battling mentally now, but he has to be attacking on a full-time basis for the Bucks.
And it all works in concert, right? I mean, we talk about the shots that Giannis took last night. A lot of those went well, and that is great, but we don't know how sustainable that is. And frankly, if the Nets have to choose, if you force them to choose, and this is not a diss on Giannis, it is just he is a very dangerous player. The weakest thing that they can at least try to force him into is taking those longer jumpers. So, yes, if it works in concert that he is then scared to hit free throws, this is going to be a problem for the rest of this series. I also just have to say, it is incredible to hear you guys say, yeah, they probably don't need James Harden the rest of the way for this series. This was supposed to be the series. This one. Remember, before this series started, we were all like, this could be the best series of the playoffs. This could be the one where it's just a drag-it-out, incredible basketball, seven games. Doesn't feel like that quite yet, but we will see what the Bucks can do. Game four is at their house on Friday, on Sunday, and that always makes a difference. We're going to talk Clippers coming up, so everyone stick with us. They did come back from a 2-0 deficit in the first round. How confident are you that they could do it again? We'll discuss shortly. On this date, 1997, Michael Jordan had his legendary flu game. Now, according to the Last Dance documentary, Jordan got sick from some pizza in Utah. Tim, what is your opinion on that story?
I think I've had that kind of pizza before on some road trips myself. Didn't come out and score 38 in the finals the next night, but I think I can relate to some pizza that made me ill the next day.
Was your pizza liquid?
Listen, I can neither confirm nor deny. You're not gonna put me on the witness stand.
Here's what just catches me on this story. The story is that six guys from the pizza delivery place came to deliver the pizza. I have never seen six guys deliver a pizza. Mm-mm. So either someone called and said, this is a pizza from Michael Jordan, which seems weird, right?
Very.
Why were there six guys, and then why would anyone know to poison the pizza? I have questions. I just have questions, that's all. It could all be true, but I have questions. The Clippers still find themselves in that 2-0 whole. Now, of course, they came back from the same deficit last series against the Mavericks, but no team has ever come back from two 0-2 deficits in the same postseason. Also, the Jazz haven't had Mike Conley up to this point, and he is getting closer to coming back. So, Tim, you covered that last series extremely closely. After seeing what you saw against Dallas, what is your confidence level for the Clips being able to dig themselves out of another one here?
Can't say I've got a whole lot of confidence there. And it's simply because the Jazz are a drastically better team than the Mavericks. The Clippers were able to attack nonstop, forcing the Mavericks eventually to go to zone. Rudy Gobert and Kristaps Porzingis, similar height, completely different defensive presences. And there's more around Donovan Mitchell than there was Luka Doncic.
Down the stretch in games 6 and 7, Kawhi Leonard flat out went off. If you look at those box scores or the play-by-plays, there's runs in which the Dallas Mavs were unable to respond. Donovan Mitchell, newsflash, is up to the challenge and will absolutely respond. And if he can't, he's gotten a tremendous supporting cast. And so it's not going to look the same way it looked getting out of the Big D.
And it's also just a difference in the strength of teams, and you guys are explaining it why. But if you look at the seeds, too, you can kind of get that cheat sheet. It's interesting. A team that loses the first two at home, which is more embarrassing, right? So you would think that that team would sort of go down the drain quicker. Those teams historically actually do better in getting out of those 0-2 hole scrapes. Because if you think about it, if they've lost the first two at home, by definition, that means they're the higher seed. They're probably the better team. So they are likely to dig themselves out or at least have a shot at doing so. When you go down 2-0 on the road, you actually have statistically less of a chance of digging yourself out of it because guess what? You're on the road for a reason. And the Utah Jazz are the number one seed for a reason. And I think that's one of the things that's been missing of some of this Utah Jazz analysis. Tim, I know how much you have covered them over the last couple years in the growth and development of this team. They are really, really good and they are really, really deep. And the fact that they are doing this without Mike Conley, again, explains why they're the number one seed. Now, I want to loop back to your Paul George comment, though, Tim, because you mentioned it during Make or Miss. Can you see what he can do to get more into this series in a way that would make you feel like, okay, that's a PG game?
You know, it's difficult because I thought the way he got into it in the Dallas series was he was able to attack. He was able to get in the lane. And look, it's not like you look at Paul George's numbers last night. His numbers were fine, but he's just not impacting winning. And again, I go back, like we can, you know, he had an off night shooting in game one. That's happens for him probably too often. But I go back to the defensive end. Paul George, he has the reputation as being one of the elite defensive stoppers in this league. He couldn't stop Luka. He can't stop Donovan Mitchell in this series. I think we need to start questioning if he should still be considered one of those dominant two-way players.
To be fair, stopping Luka and Donovan are not easy. God, they are not easy tasks at all. But I also kind of think that what we're seeing with him is sort of a byproduct of this entire team. Outside of Pat Beverly, who we once looked at as I don't want to call him a full-on villain, but he certainly sort of embraced that role. In terms of personalities of this Clippers squad, a guy that's going rah-rah, get in your face, or, you know, get a tech, Marcus Morris Sr., maybe, kind of. And so it just kind of, the 27 points happens quietly, and what we end up remarking on is Donovan's 40-plus, and it just so happened that Paul George was supposed to be guarding him. But I think when you look at both he and Kawhi, this isn't a team that gives you memorable moments with personality outside of big-time basketball moments, and those are the things that we hang on to as fans.
Yeah, and look, you do have Pat, but you've also got Rondo, you've got Boogie, but to your point, all three of those guys who are emotional guys, right, and who can get in the other teammates' faces and give other guys a lift, they're not playing in the same, they don't have the role that PG or Kawhi have, and it's just sometimes very hard to have guys who are more role players.
Well, Rondo was an assistant coach last night.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, how do you have credibility with the rest of the team unless you are right there in the muck with them, and that is what is difficult. Tim, before we let you go, I do want to shift gears to the Dallas Mavericks. We've mentioned them as the Clippers' last opponent. That series shifted from Luka is sensational pretty quick to Luka needs some help. So, Tim, the magic question around Dallas is, how can the Mavericks build around Doncic better, and what can they start doing that this summer?
Well, and let's just be real honest. What this gets down to is how do the Mavericks solve the Kristaps Porzingis problem. They are positioned to have cap space this summer. Of course, you know, we saw all the stars sign extensions. I think they bring back Tim Hardaway Jr. instead of go big free agency hunting. But the Kristaps Porzingis, Luka Doncic, the chemistry is weird, awkward, I would say. And, you know, it's really difficult to – they need Porzingis to either be that second star or the ticket to that second star. I don't know how right now you can realistically envision either of those happening. When in the trade market, you understand everybody gets his durability issues. They saw how diminished his mobility was this season. He was a defensive liability, and he's owed over $100 million for the next 3 years.
Ooh. Well, it's such a tall task to sort of navigate. But I will say that I love Tim Hardaway, Jalen Brunson, and Luka Doncic together. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a unit that gets you to a title, but I think when those two guys are shooting the ball well, they compliment Luka so much. I mean, I guess it would be easy to compliment Luka because he's just going to put you in a position to score. But I love when they're getting up and down the floor. They're hitting their threes. I also love the emergence of Dorian Finney-Smith. I don't know if there's even another step for him to take in his game in terms of taking on more of the weight in terms of helping this Mavs team become more of a contender. But in general, I see a missing NBA prototype type guy, 6'9", can create off the bounce, can also shoot the three, and gives you a little bit of defense and crashes the glass. That's the dream kind of player. I don't know exactly who that is, but that's the kind of addition I'd like to see.
Well, we've been talking about would a big star want to play with Luka, and my answer would be yes, of course. Here's a kid who is transcendent. You already know what he's going to turn into. We certainly think he's going to win an MVP at some point. He passes the ball. He seems to be great with his teammates. Does Luka have to actually go out and start recruiting? Because when we hear about how James Harden got to Brooklyn, it was Kevin Durant calling him and talking to him. Obviously, things happened in Houston that made him want to leave there. But there's usually a big star that wants to leave somewhere in the NBA. We've learned that. So what do you think, Monica, Luka should start doing to be a little bit more of an agent in his own team building here, which seems to be how the NBA works right now?
Pretend this is my towel that the guys all use post-game.
Okay.
This is what Luka should be doing.
Right.
He should be, yo, dude, come on, talk. Like, come on. Listen, he's in a great place. It's no secret that Mark Cuban is willing to make his organization attractive. My favorite part about the playoffs overall has been witnessing, literally, the changing of the guard. Luka absolutely is next up. I absolutely would want to play with him. You think about a guy who we all want to see get closer to a title like Dame Lillard. They don't necessarily complement one another, but man, that would be a ton of star power for sure.
Yeah, I do think that it's somewhat difficult just because Luka doesn't have the Team USA roots. Let's be honest, a lot of these recruiting pitches, they're, you know, either Team USA or they're, you know, hooping together in the summer in LA. They're relationships that have developed, and he doesn't necessarily have those as a kid who grew up in Slovenia and you know, spent his teenage years in Spain.
I do wonder, though, maybe he needs to, you know, I know that he goes home for the summer, and I understand and respect that, but maybe you got to do some of those LA runs or something like that to get those relationships. It is weird that that is partly how the NBA works right now, but pretending it doesn't work that way isn't going to get another big star to Dallas. Obviously, you can do the free agent pitches and clear the cap room and do it all sort of just above board the regular way. But the guys aren't tending to be available in the same way. If we look at the free agent class this summer, for example, Tim, as you noted, they're probably better off looking at that list of just re-signing Tim Hardaway Jr. to spend a bunch of money going after one of the guys who's on that list, whose contract will actually be up this summer. Unless Kawhi Leonard decides that he's leaving LA and declining his player option, there's no one really there. The way these guys team up tends to be by those relationships and requests and all of that stuff. I wonder whether Luka is going to find himself at some point having to play that game. And as Tim McMahon knows, as a Texas resident, no state taxes there, so he could just add that to his pitch as well. Tim, thank you for joining us so much today. Monica, please stick with us because coming up, old friend of the jump, Harrison Barnes, is stopping by. He's coming off one of his best seasons as a pro, and he will tell us what the Kings need to do to get over the hump. He's also, I want to talk about a pretty cool project he's working on. I'm really excited. Keep it locked. Easy money sniper. Columba, Mamba, hit you like a viper. I now want to welcome in NBA champ, also Kings forward, Harrison Barnes, to the show. Once you're an NBA champ, it's like Chris Bosh yesterday with us. I said, you're just a Hall of Famer always now. That's always got to be part of it. Harrison Barnes, welcome, NBA champ.
Glad to be here.
I love it. Today, the NBA announced that you, sir, have been selected as one of the five finalists for the inaugural Kareem Abdul-Jabbar Social Justice Champion Award. This is so cool. This is for work, your work with the Goal Setter program. We've talked about this when you've been on the show before. You're helping students from underserved communities learn financial literacy. The fact that this is the first year this award has been given out, you are one of the finalists, and just being a finalist gets your program money. What does this all mean to you?
It means a lot. I mean, just to, you know, be involved with an award like this that's named after Kareem, a guy who was vocal while he was playing, since he's been done, just a giant in terms of the civil rights movement. So it's been unbelievable just to be even in the running for this.
It's just so cool. We've talked about your project before, and I'm fascinated by it because I really think if we could get this to more kids, it would make such a difference later on in life. They did a survey last year that said that only 21 states require high school students to take any kind of courses in personal finance. Only 25 states require high school students to take any kind of course in economics. And the correlation between kids who understand how money and loans and credit cards and all of that work in terms of not only their future financial success when they're adults, but just getting into and going to college. The numbers are so stark. If you have financial literacy at a young age, your chances of going to college, that correlation is super high. So what made you want to get more involved with this? Because there's a million places, Harrison, that you could have put your energy toward. Why this project?
I mean, we talked about it before on this show, just the fact of financial literacy. Those conversations started right when I was getting ready to go to the draft and become an NBA player. For these kids to hopefully have this type of knowledge early on in their life, to be able to put themselves in better financial situations, make smarter decisions as they're going through high school, getting ready to go to college and life beyond that, I feel like it puts them in a better situation for financial freedom.
There's no feel about it, Harrison. The statistics certainly bear that out. And so we definitely applaud those efforts. But I do have to get to the basketball hero on the jump. The big question, Harrison, what do the Kings need to do to get over the hump to make a playoff push?
We just have to be more consistent. I mean, we've shown that, you know, we have the pieces, we have the talent. We've put together stretches where we play good basketball. But if we want to be in that situation where, you know, we're consistently making the playoffs and, you know, we get past the playing game, we have to do it on a nightly basis. And this season we did it for stretches, but we need to become more consistent with that.
Well, I mean, consistency is the key to life, right? But let's talk a little bit about your coach, Luke Walton. Talk to me about your relationship with him and why he works with this group as you guys are starting to turn the corner, and there's some promise there.
Now, Luke is great. You know, having him, you know, as an assistant in Golden State, playing against him when he was coaching in the Lakers, and now having him in Sacramento, I think his ability, one, to relate to players as players, but two, just to be able to really talk to guys from all different levels, whether you're a starter, whether you're coming off the bench, whether you're not getting minutes. He's great at communicating and really getting guys to run through a wall for him.
Look, if you need any dirt on him, I will give you Richard Jefferson's number. Clearly, they were the college roommates, and we can work that out. Maybe you can get a little bit more playing time out of it. I'm just saying. We can talk about that, Harrison, off air.
I like that. I like that.
Last season, you vowed not to shave or cut your beard unless the Kings achieved a 500 record. Do you plan on making another facial hair commitment again? Because, I mean, this is high-level stuff.
Wow, Rachel. I mean, I know I have a little bit of scruff going on, but this is not a playoff beard. We'll see what happens. You know, I'm all for doing things, you know, as we're getting closer to the playoffs, of trying to have some fun and trying to, you know, keep guys engaged. So whatever it takes.
All right. Well, we're gonna hold you to that, and hopefully your team will pay you off with a playoff run next season. Harrison, thank you so much for stopping by. Good luck with the Social Justice Champion Award, but clearly you and those kids already a winner. We appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate the time, guys. Thank you.
All right, guys, coming up, who should be favored for the rest of this Sixers-Hawks series? That is up for discussion. Keep it locked to the jump. We'll be right back with you. The Raptors announcing today Pascal Siakam undergoing surgery to repair a torn labrum in his left shoulder. Now, they said the surgery was successful, but let's do a little math. The injury occurred May 8th versus Memphis. The expected recovery, again, successful surgery, that's great. But even with successful surgery, the rehab time, approximately 5 months. Monica, what's your reaction?
This one stinks. I played my last 2 years of college with a partially torn labrum. I had a special brace and the whole bit, but it will repair with surgery, but it slips. You got to be mindful of this one. This is a tricky injury.
How hard is it? Like, what did it do to affect your game that you had the injury?
You would get, like, stingers. You know how you get a stinger and your arm is, like, stuck, but they, like, hang around longer. They're really, really painful. But I didn't have the surgery, so hopefully right. He doesn't have those issues.
Dave, you'll be out till November.
Yeah, questions abound for the 2019 NBA champs. What do you do with Kyle Lowry? What about Siakam? And what about Masai Ujiri?
Got to fix that. Got to answer that last one before you get to the other ones. We'll be back in a sec. Now joining us to talk a little more in depth about Hawks Sixers, Mr. Philadelphia himself, Dave McMenamin, who is out covering that series for us. Dave, you noted to our producers the Hawks are tied for the best record in the East since March 1st. So is there a legitimate question about who should actually be favored in this series if you look at their recent play?
Yeah, the bracket tells us that the Sixers are the number one seed in the Eastern Conference and the Hawks are the fifth. But over recent months of play, the Hawks are playing just as well. They've already stolen home court advantage from the Sixers, and their superstar in Trae Young is completely healthy, while Joel Embiid, as dominant as he's been in this series so far, is playing with a torn meniscus in his right knee. So Eddie, you look at this Hawks, they're a sleeping giant. They're built around a player who is perfectly fit for today's NBA and Trae Young, who can pass it and shoot it and has the floater and the craftiness. And then he's surrounded by three great shooters in Kevin Huerter, Danilo Gallinari, and Bogdan Bogdanovic. Like, these aren't just good shooters. These are great shooters around a player who is perfectly tailored for today's NBA.
Dave, think you got too much dip on your chip, my guy. Listen, the Atlanta Hawks are promising. They've been great. I think this is going to be a fun series, but I'm not ready to say that they should be favored over this Philadelphia Sixers squad. And yes, we know about this partially torn meniscus that Joel Embiid is playing with, but it sure didn't look like that thing is bothering him at all. And I just don't think the Hawks have an answer for him.
Well, Monica, where would you attack? If you're the Sixers in this game tonight, what are you looking to do to get that home court advantage back?
I'm continuing to go to and through Joel Embiid. I mean, I tweeted this out after Game 7, and not that he has not been absolutely fantastic so far in the series, but let him have 60, right? Keep Ben Simmons and Matisse Thybulle on the ball in terms of defending Trae Young. Their length seems to give him some problems. I don't know that Gallo, to me, is a little bit moody for this squad, and I don't necessarily expect John Collins to continue to shoot the three as well as he did. You got to find Bogey, but I think if this team plays through Joel Embiid, they'll be just fine.
I'd like to read your scouting reports if moody is one of the things on there. I love that. We have seen teams go to the hack-a-Ben strategy late in games to put Ben Simmons on the foul line. Dave, you were in the arena. What have you seen from that, and is it smart? Is it annoying? Where are you on this?
I mean, my eyes still hurt from seeing it. It's complete garbage. And Nate McMillan admitted that's the first time in his career that he's resorted to it. He's coached 1,347 games between the regular season and the postseason combined. The first 1,346, he was trusting his gut as a basketball purist, as someone who actually believes in the beauty of the sport. He went away from it. He went to the dark side in game two. He needs to get rid of it forever.
Wow.
The NBA needs to get rid of it forever. I once covered a game where Dwight Howard took 39 free throw attempts, and Mike D'Antoni, who was his coach at the time, apologized to the fans afterwards. He said, that's what we do at practice. So anyone who paid for a ticket tonight, you can come see our practice for free to see our guys shoot 50 free throws. When you pay to see entertainment, let's play real basketball.
Oh, Dave, can Rachel, you love this. Two things can be true. It is annoying.
Like
it is also strategic. I mean, I'm not mad at it. Ben Simmons, Giannis, the rest of the guys that don't shoot free throws so well, you got to step to the line and make some free throws. We get it. This is not pretty basketball, and it probably annoys us TV people the most as it changes up the window and with which the games will finish. But it is strategic, and if it gets you some results, I'm not mad. Lean into it.
Monica, you that's going to happen?
Dave, you cut out, but I think I said, do I think that's going to happen? I mean, I'm not mad at it is what I'm saying. Like, if there's an actual strategic advantage, foul this dude, he's going to miss the free throws, we're going to get the ball back. I want the ball back.
Well, this is part of those, like, pockets of the game thing, right? And where you are on that. If you are someone who doesn't like where James Harden is looking to exploit real rules that are in the game where he is allowed to, quote, hunt fouls, you also don't like someone creating these hack-a situations. There are people who will tell you, and by the way, I'm curious, Dave, like, you talked about Nate McMillan's record, and I hate watching it. I have to be at some of these games and report on it, and it is actually painful. But I will say the beauty and majesty of the game is not going to let you keep your coaching job, and Nate McMillan just learned that last season. Mm-hmm. Do you think, Dave, if this is available to him and he has seen it work, he should just abandon it and possibly have the Hawks lose this series because it's just not the right thing to do?
I'd rather win with honor than lose with shady tactics.
Wow.
I like he stands up for his principles, Dave. I am not surprised.
Okay, Rachel, that if we take issue with this, though, you got to take issue with Trey getting them snaking the screen and putting guys in jail. Like, Trey is a beast at drawing fouls, and there's plenty of purists that say, that's not a foul, that's not basketball. So which side is it, Dave?
Well, there is clear contact. When Trey Young puts on the brakes and Danny Green, who's trying to catch up to him, you know, goes right into him and smacks into him with his body, that's contact. That's a foul. It's crafty. It's not necessarily the way Dr. James Naismith brought up the game, but that I have far less of a problem with than intentionally fouling. You've played basketball your whole life, Monica. You ever been on a court where people are just fouling people in a pickup game?
It's obnoxious. But if it gets me a Larry O'Brien, like, the ends justify the means?
No, it doesn't. It's disgusting. It's really disgusting. It's one of the worst things that ever happened on NBA court, Hack-a-Shack. And, you know, we owe Greg Popovich for that one.
Well, you covered those teams as well, Dave. So you have a deep reservoir of hatred. I understand it. And I like hearing about it. So, all right. And I like Monica's scouting reports. Coming up, let's talk a little bit more hoop because the Nuggets, if they win game three, they could get back in this series. How could they do that? We will answer that in their next segment. All right, crunch time here on the jump. Lil Bogdanovich playing impressive defense. Look at this clip on Kawhi Leonard, fourth quarter last night. Dave, where did this come from?
He's had it in him. We remember that first round series when he was with the Pacers, when he played against LeBron James and the Cavaliers. He took on the challenge of LeBron back then. He's taken on the challenge of Kawhi Leonard right now. He's big, he's sturdy, he's strong, he has good instincts. And you look back last year's playoffs, that's what the Jazz were missing. Maybe the Jazz would have made this type of noise last year had they had Bogdanovich healthy.
I think if this happened in LA, it's a foul because he did go over the neck thing, but I love the energy and this intense moment in the game.
Absolutely, I do think that this was a big part of what was missing from this team in the bubble, and I will also add that Mike Conley shot went into the cylinder in the end of the first round and then popped out. It would have been a totally different narrative for both the Nuggets and the Jazz, so now maybe we're seeing that basketball karma pay off. All right, take a listen here.
I was surprised my dad was most worried.
What do you have there, Dad?
A trophy.
Whose trophy?
My dad's.
Oh, yes, sir. Yeah.
Point out of all the big gets and interviews we've had on this show, we've had four-year-old Kaiden on this show. So I'm just saying, Monica. Julius Randle, of course, getting that Most Improved Player award from his son this season, but he did struggle in the playoffs. You cover the Knicks locally. How will Randle's season be remembered in New York?
Let me just say, the first time I saw that video, Rachel, I got unreasonably emotional. Mm-hmm. Kaiden is the cutest kid. He's so cute. But I think Julius Randle's season will be remembered as Most Improved and the season that hopefully propelled the Knicks forward in the right direction, a year truly to build on. It's no secret that he pulled a little Casper in the playoffs, but we're not going to focus on that part.
It doesn't matter, honestly, what happens with Randle moving forward. This is going to be a season that's remembered by Knicks fans for a long time. Randle winning Most Improved Player. Tom Thibodeau winning Coach of the Year. Being a Knicks fan is like kind of like being a viewer of the show Homeland on Showtime, where it was really good back in the day, then it got really bad, and then it seemed to get better. That's what it's like watching the Knicks right now. It's getting better. So Julius Randle is a big part of that.
This feels very personal, Dave. We'll explore your television viewing after the show. I will say, I think what Julius Randle did, what Tibbs did, what the whole team did, is show not just fans, but other players around the league. This is a functional organization now where if you play well, this city will love you in a way that, frankly, I don't ever see them love anyone else. There are all kinds of sports heroes in New York, but the love for the Knicks by the basketball faithful in that city is incredible. And I think that they got a little showcase for that with Julius Randle. I'll be interested to see if other stars want a piece of it. Dave, let's go to the other side of the country because you, of course, cover the Lakers. What are their priorities entering this offseason? They are pretty strapped with what the front office can do.
Yeah, Rachel, it's got to be shooting and shooting and more shooting. The Lakers were 14th in the playoffs out of 16 teams when it came to three-point percentage. They were 15th in the playoffs in terms of average threes made per game. And here's a wild stat for you. Since Second Spectrum started tracking this in 2013-2014, this was the worst team LeBron's ever played with in terms of catch-and-shoot basketball in the postseason. If you don't have shooters around LeBron and AD, what's the point of having LeBron? You limit what they're able to do and how they're able to help a team win. And so that's on Rob Pelinka to figure out which one of these guys potentially could be part of it moving forward, a Ben McLemore, a Wes Matthews, or see what else is out there.
We will see. Danny Green moves head scratching a little bit now, but go ahead.
Let's talk about Nuggets Suns again real quick because MVP Nikola Jokic and the Nuggets finding themselves down 2-0 in this series. The series is shifting to Denver. Head coach Michael Malone has made some very strong public comments after losses. So, Monica, fill in the blank here. The Nuggets win game three if?
If the Joker has double-digit assists, Rachel, I mean, he's the guy that's been setting the table for this team. Not only is he a scorer and rebounder, but he gets his guys in position to score. They've got to get open, and he's got to find them.
Give me double-digit assists plus 30-plus points. Five out of the six games in the first round, he went for 30-plus. He's averaging 23 in this series. Give me a big game. You're getting the trophy before the game. Go out and show out.
Look,
come on, Quesarito.
Big honey, look, I think he can do it on any given night. I do wonder if the strain of not having Jamal Murray for all this time, he can do it the whole rest of the way. But we'll find out. Jump returns Monday. We'll see you guys then.